Blog Talk Radio.
This is Bob Andelman. And this is the Mr. Media Interview. How do you measure the summer? Baseball games, picnics, trips to the beach? Around my house, it's the Monday box office scores, rounded to the nearest $1 million, of course. The first three big movies of summer 2007, Spider-Man 3, Pirates of the Caribbean 3, and Shrek the Third, all open with predictably big weekend hauls. But these three sure things didn't overwhelm the general movie-going public quite the way most observers thought they would. All three have been panned by critics and aren't generating the buzz many expected. Their performance, in fact, opened the door for something a little less spectacular, the new Judd Apatow movie, Knocked Up, which has won rave reviews and could gain even bigger audience as the long hot summer continues, at least until the new Harry Potter movie opens. To talk about this summer's movies, as well as the just-completed Cannes Film Festival, which he attended, I invited The Hollywood Reporter's Tatiana Siegel to join us today. For the past 4 years, Siegel has worked at The Hollywood Reporter covering the economics of the entertainment industry. She tracks three major studios, Sony, Paramount DreamWorks, and MGM. Siegel also covers the agency beat, following the behind-the-scenes developments at such talent powerhouses as CAA, William Morris, and Endeavor. She has interviewed hundreds of studio executives, producers, and directors, and enjoys unique access to agents, managers, and publicists. Tatiana, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking time with us today. And I want to ask you about the summer, the first couple weeks of summer. I mentioned in the introduction that some of the movies have not held up the way many people thought. Would you say the summer has been boffo or bomo?
I would say boffo. I think that the box office in general is doing great. It's allowing several different types of movies to excel and do well. You have the sequels, the Pirates of the Caribbean, Shrek the Third, and Spider-Man 3, but you also have smaller films like Knocked Up doing very well and exceeding expectations. So I think it's a healthy, robust box office this year.
And the all three of the big ones, though, have had drop-off after the first week. Now, and that's, of course, that's expected. You don't expect the movies to do $100 million every weekend. But has it been more acceptable for some than for others?
I think so. I think that with Pirates of the Caribbean, it was a really big drop-off from the first weekend to the second weekend. Normally, 50% is sort of acceptable, and Pirates fell 62.4%. So that's actually a big drop, and, you know, when you're talking millions of dollars, it's a lot of money. So that was probably a disappointment for Disney. So that of the three big sequels, even though it's made a lot of money so far, that's the one that seems to be most sort of in danger.
What's the, you know, where you are in the circles that you travel, what's the explanation for that fall off? I mean, that's pretty big.
Yes. I think that probably it suffers from the same thing that King Kong did a few years ago. It's nearly 3 hours long, and people, I think, just sometimes don't have time to see three-hour movies, you know, and so a lot of people, King Kong was a fantastic movie and was one of the best reviewed movies of the year that it came out, but it was like 3.5 hours, and people just, you know, it's a big commitment. You have to get a babysitter if you're a family, and, you know, it's just a long time to see a movie, and I think that there's a perception that there's no reason for an action movie to be 3 hours long. You know, keep it tight, keep it 2 hours, and everyone's happy. So Spider-Man also was a long movie. It was it was well over 2 hours. It was 2 hours and 20 minutes. And, you know, I think that it felt long when you actually were in the theater watching it, that there were parts of it that just sort of didn't need to quite, scenes that sort of went on longer than were necessary. Not the action scenes, of course, but, you know, just some of the scenes felt a little bit long. So I think that there's a little bit of a backlash towards that. You know, like, why make a movie that long?
Well, I know in our house, we saw, I and my wife and my daughter and I, we saw Spider-Man the day that it opened.
Mm-hmm.
And my 10-year-old and I were very pumped up. My wife, you know, kind of plays along with us. And we saw the theater here in St. Petersburg, Florida, had just outfitted itself for IMAX. So we were especially excited. We were going to see it in IMAX on the opening day. And funny thing happened. My daughter and I were very excited by it and had a good time, but we came out of there, and my wife was, like, shell-shocked. The action and the violence and the special effects and the IMAX effect, it actually overwhelmed her. And that it was 2 hours and 20 minutes, it was a long time to be drawn into that. And then another thing that happened was that when Pirates opened, my daughter went on the last day of school with a bunch of friends from school, and I picked her up, and I picked up a couple of her friends afterwards, and they had an interesting response. My daughter was all enervated. It's just the way she is with the movies. But her friends were physically and mentally exhausted and overwhelmed by the violence and the nonstop action. Now, I haven't seen it yet, but they literally, they were too tired to even talk about the movie, and none of them wanted to see it again, which is a very different response than they had to the first two movies.
Right.
And I wondered if part of, you know, if there was some, if anyone had considered that aspect, that is, like, for Pirates, the first two movies seem to be pretty good for children. It's a little much, but they really enjoyed it and they really got into it. But this one doesn't seem like it's quite made for the same audience. And
well, I think you raise a good point where it's exhausting. And when you look at a movie like Titanic, which also was, you know, 3 hours or so, that people could handle seeing multiple times because it wasn't like nonstop action. It was a love story. It was, you know, obviously special effects laden, but it was a story too. And, you know, when you have sort of these movies that are just, you know, one explosion after another or you know, something that's just, it just, to make it 3 hours is, you know, it's almost, it's just too much for the audiences.
Mm. So the good news in this, I guess, is that it opens the door for people to want to go see a nice, calm comedy like a Knocked Up or something like that. Is that right?
Right, because the people are at the theaters and maybe one show is sold out and they'll see another show. And it Knocked Up did very well. It made nearly $30 million, which was what its budget was in its first weekend. So that's obviously a success. And I think that the studio, which was Universal, would have been happy with anything more than $20 million. And, you know, it definitely exceeded expectations. It's a movie that probably won't drop dramatically in its first weekend to second weekend. And, you know, we'll continue to sort of, through word of mouth, draw more audiences. It has had very good reviews, unlike the Pirates, Shrek the Third, and Spider-Man 3. So I would imagine that, you know, people will see it in the second, third weekend, and it'll do very well this summer.
It's interesting that this movie pretty much establishes Apatow. I mean, there's an Apatow kind of movie now.
Right.
The 40-year-old virgin, things like that. But who else benefits from the success of this movie? Is it Hegel? Is it Seth Rogen? Rogen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he is sort of now looking like the next Steve Carell as far as, like, the guy you want to cast in your comedy. He also will be in another Judd Apatow film called Superbad that's at Columbia Pictures. And in fact, today I reported in the Hollywood Reporter that Apatow has just set up another film with Jack Black and Harold Ramis, who's one of the legends of comedy. You know, he wrote and directed some of the classics from the 70s and 80s, and he'll direct a project called Year One, for Columbia Pictures, and Michael Cera, who's not a big name but is one of the sort of Apatow up-and-comers, he was he played George Michael Bluth on Arrested Development.
Right.
He will also star in this film. So Judd Apatow sort of, he works with the same people over and over again, and he sort of makes some of these you know, less big names become big names, like Steve Carell, what, you know, wasn't a big name before he was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. So, you know, I think that as a comedy actor, it's obviously great to be in a Judd Apatow movie.
Now, you've mentioned Steve Carell, so I want to ask you about Evan Almighty, which is due this summer, the sequel, sort of, to Bruce Almighty. Carell, up until this point, seems like he can do no wrong, and yet anyone who's seen the trailers for Evan Almighty has got to be scratching their head. It doesn't. There's nothing funny about it. Is there any buzz on this movie that we could discuss? Are you hearing anything?
You know, it is sort of it's a strange choice for him, because he could have, he, you know, just did Little Miss Sunshine, which was, you know, a fantastic career move, because even though he didn't make a zillion dollars doing it, it put him into this, like, sort of category of Oscar-nominated type movies.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that movie, Evan Almighty, I'm not sure if it was just a paycheck kind of move, but it doesn't look like anything fresh or original. It looks like a lot of rehashing of the first one, and sort of a Jim Carrey type project. And I think, like, audiences aren't even really, Jim Carrey's having trouble, you know, booking movies.
Right.
I think that kind of type of humor has been superseded by the Judd Apatow type of humor right now, or The Office, people from The Office. I mean, even though Steve Carell obviously is from The Office, the writers from The Office, the kind of projects they're doing, a little bit more ironic and wry, as opposed to, you know, just straightforward, kind of goofy laughs.
Well, it's interesting that, I mean, Bruce Almighty, Jim Carrey had Steve Carell to pick on. That's what made the movie, in a lot of cases. That was the humor of the movie. So here you got the guy who was the, I don't know, it just doesn't, I hope I'm wrong, because we certainly enjoy Carell, but it just doesn't look like it's going to work.
Well, even if it doesn't, he will still be making movies.
Oh, sure.
Years. He is booked probably pretty solid for a while.
I guess the other really big movie this summer will be Harry Potter. Any doubt from anybody that that will perform as expected?
I think that that's definitely as sure a thing as you can have. I mean, they just do every one of those movies with real quality. They've used different filmmakers on many of them. You know, Alfonso Cuarón did one, Mike Newell, and just they're always, you know, visually very exciting films, and the books have, you know, they're fantastic sellers. So I think that there's no reason to expect that it wouldn't do well.
What do you hear about other movies this summer? Some that maybe we haven't heard as much about. Anything we should be expecting to kind of break out of the pack?
You know, I'm not quite sure what is sort of most. Let me. Can you edit at all?
No, we just push on through. But if you want to, if something crosses your mind as we talk, we can come back to it.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. Probably will be a fun comedy. That's with Adam Sandler and Kevin James and Jessica Biel. That's Universal. The Bourne Ultimatum with Matt Damon. Mm. That's another third shot at a sequel franchise that the first two were really good, really well reviewed, so I would expect that to be, you know, another winner at the box office. I'm really looking forward to the Simpsons movie. It could be great, it could be disastrous, we'll see, but you know, I, as a fan of the show, I'm looking forward to it. That's from 20th Century Fox. Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, will be another one for the comic book type crowd. Ocean's 13, you know, with its all-star cast, that's probably something that looks good. A movie that's not getting a whole lot of buzz yet, but I think will do very well is Surf's Up. That's an animated one from Sony Pictures Animation. It's the voices of Shia LaBeouf and John Heder and Jeff Bridges, and it's penguins that surf, and it's I've already seen it. It's very cute, and I think it's a good option for kids, parents to take their kids to.
Okay, and of these other movies that you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned that you saw Surf's Up. Of the other movies that you mentioned, have you seen any of them yet?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I saw some films over at Cannes, but they won't be summer films. Although I guess, they won't be any. None of them were summer films.
All right. Well, let's use that as a good segue then. Tell me about the film festival this year. What was there any theme that came out of it for you, or you know, any commonality?
Well, as a festival, because it's a festival and a marketplace, so I was covering both the festival and the marketplace,
okay,
where movies are bought and sold. But I think as a festival, the one thing that sort of stood out to me is that men still make all the movies. I don't. It just seemed to be like, I would go to panels and it would be like an entire panel of male directors, you know. Or it's just kind of, it's a little bit. It feels funny that God, this industry still is just seems to really be only employing men as directors, at least in the sort of the kind of art house type of films that are embraced by the festival's jury.
Hmm. Why do you suppose that's still the case? I mean, and where's Betty Thomas this year? Doesn't she have a movie? No, but why is that still happening?
I am not sure. I think that there's just that women are, I think the numbers are dropping every year as far as women directing movies. Like every year it goes down a little bit. The year before they had Sofia Coppola making a big splash with Marie Antoinette, but the film was like roundly booed by the critics at the press screening. So it was something that, it's just, there's a dearth of female directors, and it's particularly making the type of movies that the French embrace, and I'm not sure why.
Now, we've had women running studios. Have they not provided a helping hand to women directors?
I would say definitely not. I mean, I think that women running studios is, yes, every studio seems to have one woman in a high and prominent position, but I don't think it's done anything to increase the employability as a director for women out there working. And there's also a problem with female action stars. There have been several movies that have tried to go with Catwoman and Elektra, and my colleague Boris Kitt recently did a column on the, you know, what's going on with the female action movie. But that's an interesting sort of subcategory of like what's going on with that. There's really only been, to my memory, one very successful one, and that was Angelina Jolie's Tomb Raider, the very first one.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't really translate well to audiences.
Where are the opportunities? This is a little off where I thought we'd go, but where are the opportunities for women in film, other than being the girlfriend, the mom, the hooker, on screen and off? I mean, I mean that in all sincerity. Where are their opportunities?
If you look at the women that win Best Actress every year,
yeah,
they tend to be either hookers or nuns.
Or victims, we should add. There's a lot of victimization.
Yeah. So I think Reese Witherspoon's Walk the Line portrayal was refreshing because it was a character that was neither a hooker or a nun, and she sang, and that was sort of encouraging to me as a woman watching the type of roles that women get lauded for, and I think that was a good sign, and I think Reese Witherspoon also picks very good movies, so you know, she'll be in more movies that she will demand more scripts that have sort of good characters. So at least you know, there are certain actresses that can kind of command that power. But
you cover the agency side of things. On the business side of Hollywood, are you seeing more women agents?
Yes. I mean, that's also a career that, you know, if at CAA you could swing a cat and not hit a woman. There's there's not a lot of women working at the agencies, especially CAA, the number one agency. So, you know, that might be the reason why there's, you know, it trickles down. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, all right. I'm really glad we got into that for a minute, but I do want to come back to the Cannes Film Festival. What will people be talking about, either in terms of titles that came out of the festival that emerged, mm-hmm. or on the business side? Was there anything different about the business of Hollywood in Cannes this year?
Well, the hot titles, the Michael Moore's Sicko was probably the most talked about title, just because it sort of has a little bit of controversy built in, where it's a documentary about the healthcare industry, and there's a part of the movie where he takes some of the people who can't get healthcare in the United States, he takes them to Cuba to get healthcare, and so it has a little bit of controversy, but the French love him. A couple years ago won the best film there, the Palme d'Or, for Fahrenheit 9/11. So they really like him there, and his movie was really the talk of the Croisette. And then there was also the movie that that won the best film, the Palme d'Or this year, was titled 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. And it was a film that dealt with abortion, and it was a Romanian film. So also a little bit of controversy. I'm sorry, a little bit of controversy with it. But I think that the movie that seemed to be very much embraced there was the Coen Brothers' No Country for Old Men. That was a movie that the critics seemed to universally like. And then from a business perspective, the big sale was James Gray's We Own the Night, which stars Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg and Eva Mendes. And that was a film that was bought by Sony, and they paid roughly $11.5 million to acquire North American rights. So so that was kind of the big business story. But ironically, that film was actually booed by the audiences.
really?
So, yes. And I actually thought it was you know, quite an enjoyable movie, but the critics there, at least the English language critics, really were sort of put off by it.
Hmm. One of the interesting things that seems to have emerged post Cannes this year is that, and I don't know if this is a big story or not, but Frank Miller was there, coming off mm-hmm. of 300. And announced going forward on the adaptation of Will Eisner's The Spirit.
Yes.
But what seemed to happen after he left is that word got around that Sin City 2 got postponed. Is that a big deal?
You know, I think that he's going to concentrate on The Spirit right now. I actually interviewed him there at Cannes, and you know, I think he wants to move forward with The Spirit. You know, it's his first directorial project that's solo. He did Sin City with Robert Rodriguez. So, you know, he's already in negotiations with Samuel L. Jackson to play the villain in The Spirit, and he's looking to find the right actor to play The Spirit. So I would suspect that's the project that he is going to move forward with first.
Do you think that Sin City 2 getting pushed back, is that in response to Grindhouse not delivering?
Possibly. I mean, the Weinstein Co. would never admit it, but I think that you know, there was a need for that film to do well at the box office, and it didn't do well because they're a new company. But The Weinstein Co. and Dimension Films, which is run by Harvey and Bob Weinstein, they insist that their company is healthy and whatnot. And Sin City did do well in terms of box office versus budget, so there's no reason to suspect that a sequel wouldn't do well. Grindhouse may have been yet another I don't feel like watching a three-hour movie part of that phenomenon. I think it's almost like arrogance with these filmmakers that people think that people want to watch three-hour movies, and I don't think they do.
Mm. It was a long double feature, and the payoff just wasn't there, and twice. So, I mean, it was entertaining, but I think I would have enjoyed it more sitting at home, being able to pause it at some point, get up and leave the couch for a few minutes.
Right. I think that if you look at the movies, that sort of I think that the three-hour movies are problematic.
Mm. Well, Tatiana, I have one more subject I just have to ask you about before we let you go, and you've been very gracious with your time. Do you think that Vincent Chase's film, Medellin, will make it big?
it's that life imitating art, imitating life. I have no idea, but my flight back from Cannes, the entire cast of Entourage was on board both flights of my plane, so that was kind of funny to see. You know, we forget sometimes that that's not real, that they're not a real people out there, but. I'll be watching like everyone to see how it does.
Now, you cover the agencies, so I wonder if – it seemed like a year ago the show was really blowing up and we were hearing all about everyone just following the show religiously and talking about it. It's now going into its fourth season. Is there still the buzz? Does anyone care what Ari Gold does at this point?
Within Hollywood – they do, I think it had its best ratings. I'm not a TV reporter, but I think that it did very well ratings-wise this year. It might have been its best year yet, but the buzz I was hearing was that the episodes were not as strong and not as compelling as they've been in years past.
Mm.
So, I think that it might no longer be like water cooler talk, you know, everyone discussing last night's episode, but I think that it's branched out beyond Hollywood, and people like, you know, in the rest of the country are enjoying it. So that's probably more important for the makers of the show.
Mm. Very good. Well, Tatiana, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate your time. Folks, if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next time for another interview with Mr. Media.